and welcome to this special edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen, Parker J. Thank you so much for joining me. Yesterday, we talked about life as an extroverted writer. Today, we're going to be talking about life as an introverted writer with my very brave introverted writer, Kathy McCrum. She's going to be helping us today to understand what life is like as an introvert and as an introverted writer. I can't wait to dig into the conversation. I want to thank our supporters for their support. We have been showcasing Christian authors worldwide for the past 8 years, and as God gives us grace, we'll continue to do so. If you want to financially support this ministry, simply go to patreon.com/rightstuff and see how you can help us out. And as always, we covet your prayers. We want to thank our corporate sponsors for their support, Christian Book Club. If you want to find out how they can help you build your readership, go to christianbookclub.net. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce my guest co-host and contributor today, Kathy McCrum. Kathy, how terrified are you?
Talking to you is more like talking to a person, so it's not so bad. It's a weird kind of blend of anxiety and excitement, I guess.
It's totally okay because sometimes I still get nervous, even though I've been doing this for a long time. Very excited, Kathy, that you are here with me. Now, yesterday, I had my good friend Alan Stedham on the show with me, and we talked about life as an extroverted writer. And me and Alan, we truly don't understand the introvert way of thinking of what a writer thinks like. We just don't understand it. But you're here today to help us unpack that topic, representing all the introverts in the world. No, I'm just joking.
Yeah. No pressure.
No pressure at all. But just understanding what introvert means and what it is, things of that nature. So my first question to you is this. If you had to describe being an introvert in one word, what would that word be?
Probably internal. It's kind of tricky because I think it changes from person to person what it means, even possibly personality type to personality type.
Even being an extrovert, it changes from person to person. How often do you have to prepare yourself when you have to go into social situations?
It depends on the situation. Like going to the store requires a different type of preparation from, say, going to church or going to a friend's house or going to a birthday party. I have to really assemble myself. I'm not a naturally organized person, so that's a little stressful for me. But even going to see friends, I sometimes have to force myself to leave the house. Like I'm in a lovely writing group. Wednesday comes around. At Wednesday, I'm supposed to leave the house at 6, 5:45, 6. 6:15, everybody's like, are you leaving? And I'm like, yeah, I just got it. But I have to force myself to go. This summer, I had to fly out of state twice, and both times were very difficult because I don't enjoy crowds. I dislike confined spaces. I don't like germs, and I really don't like heights. So this was kind of like Bermuda Triangle of things.
Yes.
I don't enjoy. For talking to you, is basically herbal tea and prayer.
There are people who have misconceptions about introverts. I know I did. What are misconceptions people have about introverts?
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of them. And not all introverts are the same. Some people will have these. Some people will feel like these are misconceptions and some people won't. But like if we could, we would all become extroverts because introverts are really extroverts with social anxiety or we don't like people. We're selfish or we think we're better than other people. We don't have people skills and can't navigate social settings. So we don't like to talk. This is certainly not true of me. This is not a subset of not liking people or not having social skills. It's more of you don't like to talk. It's a belief that we don't want to participate in conversations or we maybe don't even have the skills to know how to participate in conversations. We're not fun people. We don't enjoy activities or sports. I was even told I don't know how to have fun and need to learn. That's not condescending.
Not at all.
Oh my gosh.
I can't believe someone said that.
Please continue. We don't care about things as much as extroverts do, and we aren't emotionally present. We don't need contact, and we want to be left alone all the time, and we don't want to be invited to things. This is not true. We might not go, or we might not want to go, but we do want to be included. And this is a fun one. We all like books and are super smart, or we aren't as smart as extroverts are. It's both. You get them both. We can't be assertive, or we're not good at being on team players. We can't be good leaders. And my favorite, I'm going to quote it because it's my favorite. Introverts are doomed to isolated unhappiness.
Wow. That's so not wrong. That is so generalizing a whole set of people. I want to definitely go back to the part where you said we don't care as much as extroverts or aren't as emotionally present. Some of the best characters in fictions are actually introverts with a deep intensity.
Mr. Darcy was not an extrovert.
I love Mr. Darcy. Who doesn't
right?
If you're a Jane Austen
fan,
who doesn't like Mr. Darcy? Let me ask you this question, because you listed a lot of misconceptions that people may have about introverts. Is it really the world's fault that introverts are perceived in this light, or is it a combination of the personality and the world's perception of what an introvert is?
I think that's kind of a loaded question, and I'm going to like have a brief caveat of I think my Myers-Briggs personality might be showing here with INFP. I think that a lot of misconceptions of introverted behavior are in a way founded on cultural priorities. To me, and again, one introvert in a world of how many? In the West and in America specifically, we value rapid fire conversation, and people who don't have that it doesn't click immediately, don't have that innate desire to sit down and have like this pow conversation, can really be at a loss. Say a business setting or even personal interactions, this could mean that extroverts are at an advantage for, you know, making decisions, making deals, and negotiating. A society that has different value systems might have introverts rise to the top. I don't know. I've only lived in America. But there is a mistaken belief that not being loud, like you mentioned, not being loud with your emotions means that you're closed off and you don't care. That's not necessarily true. I think a lot of mistaken beliefs are based on misunderstandings and sometimes a lack of empathy. Tying this into writing, because I know you talk about writing from time to time, I think this is one of fiction's strengths, because fiction allows us to see through the eyes of someone else in a different time and a different place. And that can sometimes give us a window into how another person, who might not be the same, like for me, seeing to an extrovert, or for you seeing into an introvert, give them a glimpse of how they function. Because it's hard for people to see validity in things that don't come naturally. Not everybody, of course. And I think it's kind of both. There's an imbalance between the number of introverts and the number of extroverts in the world. There are fewer of us, and the minority sometimes can be misunderstood. I think that's part of it. I think that it's like one of those like sitcoms where you have the two people and they're saying the same thing, but they're saying it from different angles and neither of them see what they're saying. That probably was vague. Did that make any sense?
Well, it makes perfect sense. And I like the fact that you brought it into fiction writing. I recently heard that children who read fiction books actually learn sympathy and empathy through fiction because of what you just said, of seeing a character or seeing into another person who may be different from you in some capacity, which was one of the reasons that prompted me to ask this question in a Facebook group that we both are in, where I wanted to know what is it like to be an introvert. And I thank everyone who responded to that question, because that's how this show came to be. Because even though I'm an extrovert, it's difficult for me to understand. But even if I can't understand, I want to at least be sympathetic to that. One of the examples one gentleman gave, Kathy, is he was at work and this lady made some comment and he didn't really know what to say. So he just smiled and kind of didn't say anything. And so she found him rude. And he said, "I wasn't being rude. I didn't have anything to say." That's not being rude. That's "I don't have anything to say." But I can see how, from her point of view, he was perceived as being rude or condescending, and wasn't that at all. Another young lady made a comment that she may come off as arrogant because she doesn't talk to you. And she's like, "I'm not being arrogant. I don't have anything to say. I don't really want to be around here. And another author who said, it's people-y out there. That was her comment. It's people-y. Lots of people out there.
Yes.
Stay away from the people-y areas, you know. So they had some really interesting comments, and I may read some of those later on in our interview, just so our listeners can understand what some introverts have said about living life as an introvert. So my next question is this. How do you cope when you are in social situations that make you uncomfortable, or do you cope at all?
I'm kind of amused because it goes back to what you're saying that one gentleman said, because being quiet doesn't necessarily mean not coping or coping. You know, sometimes that's just what it is. It's just being quiet. I think, again, it's going to vary from person to person. For me, it depends on why I might be uncomfortable in this situation. Am I uncomfortable because my ethics and values are fundamentally being challenged? Are there so many people, or am I myself being devalued? That's a wide range. I don't like crowds in general, and I do tend to retreat to the edge of the room unless I see someone else who looks uncomfortable. Because while I don't like crowds, I do love people. Except for the days that I like cats, dogs, and trees more.
Right.
But I think that might be universal. I don't know. I mean, maybe. I don't know. But if I can focus on a person and block out the crowd, I'm usually fine. When I'm in a large crowd, I pull out what I call my extrovert flares, and I can break those open. And I can burn bright and strong and briefly. And then they go out, and I'm exhausted, and I need to retreat and hide. But when I have those flares lit, people think I'm an extrovert, because I do. I love people. I love interacting with people. I love talking with people. But large crowds can be exhausting. The lights and the noises, the sensory input, the lights, noises, the smells, all the people. It can be very tiring, and my best coping mechanism is just to retreat and rest. One time, my husband and I took all four kids to the mall to get shoes, and we got back out to the minivan, and he looked at me, and he started laughing. He's like, do you need trees?
Right.
So we drove to a local nature park, and he stayed in the van with all four kids who were like, I want to go home. I want to play on the video games. Get in the car. And I spent 15 minutes walking through the snowy woods, and these big soft fat flakes are falling from the sky, and there's like these bright bursts of colors, cardinals fly past, an occasional cheer cheer of cardinals, and I'm just walking in the woods, and I check the trees to make sure there's no poison ivy, and yes, I actually hugged a tree, and I felt better, and it was just like medicine. I needed that balance of being alone in the quiet in the woods to counteract going to the mall. I don't do well in personal confrontations if I'm being railroaded. I don't think anybody does, but unlike some of my extrovert people, when I'm railroaded or someone's just running me over and not talking, I tend to shut down emotionally and withdraw. Unless you hit a topic that pushes the button, then good luck shutting me up. But that's hard because a lot of extroverts tend to talk straight over introverts. And it's rude and it's a little devaluing. So that one's harder. I get flooded and I just shut down.
I definitely have to go back to your extrovert flares, which is brilliant, by the way, because in that case, there are times I have introvert rashes, right? Because there are times where, not often, where I was like, I need some space real quickly. It's usually under a stressful moment, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I need some space. Or if I'm trying to write something and I get bombarded, I said, okay, I need to be by myself for a few moments. Not often. Okay, but once in a while, I get a rash, an introvert rash. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And my introvert's flaring up again. You know, I need to go off somewhere.
Yeah.
But that is so brilliant. And this is why you're such a good writer, because I would have never thought of it as an extrovert flare. I love that term. And I hope our introverts listening love that term. And I know some introverts are saying, yeah, it is like a flare. You can see it in the sky, and it burns bright and then it's gone. Okay.
It's gone.
God, never to return. At least
if you touch it, it burns.
What are some positive attributes that introverts have that are not fully recognized?
Introverts can be great listeners. I mean, it's one of the things that most introverts enjoy, sitting down and listening to extroverts talk. It's fun. And one of the things that I think is, for me, introverts, since we can be drained by social interactions, we do tend to be picky with the people that we love and trust. And we pour a lot of time and energy and love into those relationships and tend to be very loyal to that. You know, we've made a huge investment in time and energy. That's really special. I mean, it's stuff that we really treasure you when we do that. We are very thoughtful in our relationships. I'm not saying that extroverts aren't. I'm not saying that. but there's a lot of nuance in networking. And rather than having like a broad base, we'd rather spend time with specific people. And a lot of us, not all of us, love just focusing on one person at a time. We do think over our communications, especially written communications, very well. And I think that can make for very compassionate and thoughtful leadership, as opposed to people who might think that introverts can't be leaders. And since we tend to value one-on-one time, we could be very solid mentors if we know what we're talking about, which we usually do when we talk sometimes. Anyway, extroverts seem to process interactively. And in the heat of the moment, that can lead to some miscommunications. But introverts have a strength in this, because even though we don't process quickly, we might be slow to communicate when we are asked, surprise questions. That deep thinking allows us to take really solid answers. We just like being prepared. Introverts can be really good writers. They can be really good at written language. I read a couple studies that indicate that introverts rely more on long-term memory than on short-term memory during conversation. So unexpected questions might be difficult to answer unless it's a subject we know inside and out. But a surprise question like, so what are you reading, will lead to a long, even though we know exactly what it is because it's quite a good book and character XYZ is just the best ever, and the book is right next to our bedside table, and we draw a complete blank. But if you ask us a question about, what stories did you like in grade school? Oh, yeah, I liked Nancy Drew or Hardy Boys or Marguerite Henry or Encyclopedia Brown. I love the mysteries. And we can rattle stuff off because that's in long-term storage. I was talking about this with my kids this afternoon, and I said, so what are you reading now? My introvert daughter looked at me deer in the headlights, and she's like, no, I know what she's reading. She's reading a Dorothy L. Sayers novel. She's reading Whose Body? My extrovert 10-year-old son is all, it's Cricket in Times Square. It's a really good book. It's my favorite. But you ask them both, and they have completely different responses. It might not sound like a good thing, but I think what it means is that introverts, when we pull up that long-term data, we've processed it very, very richly. And because we tend to think things over, we can be very good at written communication. And it's probably why a lot of your introvert friends would rather text, email, or send a message on Messenger rather than make a phone call.
So here's my next question. We all know that God created everybody, but it's really interesting that only one out of every three people are introverts. So, I'm going to give you a really hard question. Why do you think God did that? You should know, Kathy, right?
Yes. Oh, I'm not going to second guess God here.
Right. Right.
I have to wonder if it's something like colors. Like, we don't need color. We can't even see all the colors. There are colors beyond the visible spectrum on both sides that we have no idea that they're there. But when we find them, the way the world acts around the colors, it adds richness and depth to the world. Even the stuff we can't see, the bees knowing where the flowers are and which flowers are better, or some insects like glow and ultraviolet, all these different things that we can't see, but they make the world a bigger, stronger place. I was lucky enough to go hear Dr. Temple Grandin. I don't know if you all know who she is. Speak a couple of years back, and she said something that really struck me, and I'm going to totally slaughter it and paraphrase it.
Mm-hmm.
And that just like there's a breadth of human experience and personality in neurotypical and not neurotypical behavior and people, that all of those different functions work together to improve the way we function as a society. It adds texture, it adds depth. We see things that the other people don't. It isn't just that we all like different types of ice cream, but that we all add this whole perspective to the world. If the whole world was made of architects, where would the farmers be?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of it. Maybe introverts are just so awesome that the world needs more extroverts to balance it out. Okay, no, I'm just kidding. So actually, why fewer introverts? I have no solid ideas on that. But I do feel like there's a complement of the way people function.
I love that you use the example of colors, because we can't see all the colors, but we know that they are there. And it just enriches our understanding of God's creativity, that he didn't make us all the same. He made us in his image. And that, I think that's incredible, absolutely incredible. Yesterday on the show, Alan Seddon mentioned that Adam and Eve would not have had such extreme personality broad when they were first created. You know, they wouldn't have been as extreme. But over time, we have extremes of introverts and extroverts, where they probably would have been much more balanced, if you will, because the bad side of extroverts, like I was mentioning, is not having those boundaries, sometimes being more of a people pleaser. And as we said on yesterday's show, you can be very manipulative because you get people to trust you, you can influence them, and then you have a Hitler, or then you have a Mussolini, then you have, not even that, you have a Jim Jones, you have these people who take advantage of you because you have that very charismatic personality that people are naturally drawn to. And so that's something we need to be mindful of as well as extroverts, because that can be. Not saying that introverts can't do it either. I'm not saying that. But generally speaking, extroverts do draw people and influence people. And that's something we need to be mindful of.
I have to say that has me thinking that maybe that's part of it. Maybe there's the grounding effect to taking the time and centering and looking and just kind of regrouping internally. Maybe that's part of the grounding effect for extroverts, just like reaching out of a safety bubble would be a growth experience for introverts.
I'm glad that you really took time out to be here, because I know you're being very brave, and this is an uncomfortable place for you to be at, just talking, but you're here. And I think that's a sign to other introverts, like, you can do this, and you actually set things into parameters so we can do this together. And I'm glad that that can happen, because some people can be completely debilitated by this because they don't go outside. Not everyone, obviously, but there are some people who are so unwilling sometimes, extroverts and introverts alike, they're so unwilling to come out what's comfortable for them that they don't experience things, you know, and that can be a problem. So Kathy, my next question to you is about the Myers-Briggs personality assessment. A lot of people know what it is, but go ahead and give us the nitty-gritty about it.
First, I'm going to have this huge disclaimer that I am not an expert at this by any means, by any means. I used to joke that, yes, I have my degree from the Reader's Digest School of Pop Psychology.
Right.
but anyway, so the basic gist of it is that there are a lot of variations in human behavior, but they can be sorted into comprehensible groups based on the way people perceive the world and evaluate and process information and the way they act on that information. There's four areas that you kind of said, like, what is your favorite world? Do you prefer to focus on an outer world or on like an inner world, like your outer scape or your inner scape? I don't know. Is that even a word? That would be extroversion and introversion. Information. Do you focus more on the basic information that you take in, or do you prefer to interpret the world and add meaning. And that would be the sensing and the intuition. Decisions, how do you focus on the information that you take in? Are you Spock or McCoy, which would be, do you look at logic first, Spock, or do you look at people first, Bones? So which one of those are you more like? And that would be thinking and feeling. And then the way we deal with the outside world. Do you like things definite, decided, a list, and just put a period on the end of your sentence? Do you ramble? Do you want more information? Do you want more open? And that would be judging and perceiving. Judging is like an orb web. You have structure. You have those long radial lines of spider web of webbing going out, and you have that lovely circle going all along in the middle. Perceiving is like a cobweb, where it's just kind of like mass, and there's no real structure to it. They both catch flies, and both spiders are able to eat. But you have this beautiful orb web, which is just gorgeous and lines, and it's just beautiful. And then you have this kind of like nebulous blob. The perceiving people, that it's more like we're open to more options. We're willing to look at new information, look at things different ways. Judging people like to have things to be decided. They like the lists. They like.
I love your example. This is why I'm so glad you're with me, because you're pulling out these really wonderful examples that people can get. I love how you said they're both spiders. They both have webs. They just do it differently. You know what I mean? And that's phenomenal. That's brilliant, if you will. Just knowing that we may view things, we may do things differently, but we're essentially the same person. We're essentially humans, okay? We're just processing things differently.
You don't want to walk into either one of them, but, you know, they both catch bugs, and that's the point.
Where do you fall within the Myers-Briggs assessment?
I am an INFP, so I am introverted person, and I interpret the world through intuition, and I make decisions more like Bones. Although I will add that I can be very logical, and I do like mathematics. I've forgotten most of my calculus. I will confess that I've forgotten most of my calculus. I think that my children like destroyed my brain cells or something. And so I don't remember it. But I used to come home from work after a long day of stressful work, and I would sit down and I would work one calculus problem. And it was kind of like, and once I was done with my calculus problem, then I could talk to my husband. I can't do that anymore because I've forgotten most of it. But I prefer to stay open to new information. You can kind of hear it in my voice where I kind of like ramble. P's tend to ramble more than J's do. I'm an introvert who is intuitive and is more like Bones, even though I like math, and I ramble. How does that? Does that answer questions?
You lost me at calculus because I took calculus and I was thankful to get a D. Okay, and I could never see myself distressing.
Can I just tell you the funniest story?
Yes.
Okay, this is P activating, guys. Okay, so I was in college, and I had a really, really rough semester. I decided that I was going to take calculus, the second semester of calculus, over summer in a 6-week burst. And this seemed like a really good idea at the time, because then it would be done. It wasn't. And so I thought, well, just one class. Who does just one class? So for this 6-week quarter during the summer, I took calculus, and I took political science, and I took PE. I don't remember what PE class it was, but it was at 6 o'clock in the morning, and that was stupid. But anyway, so I went through this semester, I went through the 6-week quarter of calculus in one like 6-week period with another class while I was working 25 hours a week and all this other stuff. It was really stupid. I got to the final, I got a C. I was devastated. I got a C. I failed. I went to the professor and I'm like, please, you've got to lower my grade. And she says, what? And I said, you've got to lower my grade. I got to give me a D, because if I have a D, then I can retake the class and then I can get a better grade. And she's all, I have never in all my 20 years of teaching had someone come to me and say, please, can you give me a D instead? So she's like, fine, I'll give you a D. And I'm like, oh good, now I can take it over and get it right. So I go the next semester, I sign up for calculus and I start taking it. I'm like, I already know all this stuff. They thought I was so super smart. I'm like sitting through class. I'm not even doing the homework. I'm answering the questions. And everybody's like, wow, she's so smart. She knows calculus really fast. Look how fast she's picking it up. And I get through and I take the exam and I got an A and I'm all excited. It doesn't show up on my reports because it didn't drop in time. So I had to take calculus.
Oh my gosh. I would die.
For the third time, I didn't even do the homework. I was just sitting there, and I'm sitting there. I'm like, Swakowski has a better textbook than this one.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't even know what the adjective is that goes in that sentence. What kind of person decides, oh, yes, please, fail me so that I can take this again when I already know the material?
So my next question is this, Kathy. You recently had some big news to share. What was that news?
Well, last year I signed a 3-book contract with Enclave Publishing for my science fiction series, Children of the Consortium. And the first book is Recorder, and it will be out this November.
Now, I know that although the book hasn't been released yet, you've already gotten rave reviews. You have to tell us a little bit about that.
Oh my gosh. So, okay. So, see, this is like, I knew you were going to ask this, and I still, I'm like, introvert, brain freeze. Okay, so Publishers Weekly reviewed my book, and I used to work at a library, and so I was like, And my mother was like, does that mean anything? I'm like, yes, it's Publishers Weekly. So among anything, the last two sentences of their review is, Mitt Crumb achieves a fascinating coming-of-age story in a convincing far future technical milieu containing credible characters with consistent and powerful motivations. Readers looking for hard science fiction with heart should snap this up. Like, what?
Yes.
They said to snap it up. I was useless the whole day.
Very exciting when that happens. And for a wide read review site like Publishers Weekly to give you those kudos to you, Kathy. That's a beautiful, beautiful
thing.
Especially for your debut novel. That's awesome. I love how they said readers looking for hard science fiction with heart to snap this up. And that really kind of reflects your personality, you know, that
Thank
you do
you.
Like the facts. You do like to be intuitive, but there's a lot of heart behind that. And it lets us know that just because you're an introvert doesn't mean you're like this wallflower that wants to be isolated forever in your room with a box and a puppet. You know, it's not that.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, I don't know.
That,
maybe.
You know? It's not
no,
that.
Okay. No,
I mean, you
that.
May retreat to that place, you know, but
yeah.
That doesn't mean you want to stay there. So when you got that contract, what were you feeling?
Well, it's kind of funny because when I was on the phone with Steve Lobby and he was like, are you okay? He says, if you need to put the phone down and scream, that's okay. Putting the phone down to scream never occurred to me. My problem was that I couldn't actually breathe. And he's like, are you still there? I was just done. I'm like, you know, if I mimic this, it would just be dead air time, and that would, you know, not be very fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't breathe, and when I finally started reading, I just couldn't stop crying. Writing is, as your listeners will know, or a lot of your listeners will know, it can be hard. It's a very long, strange journey, and to have someone tell me that they not only wanted this one book, but a whole trilogy. I was not very coherent for a while. I got an email from Steve that morning, and he's like, I'm trying to call you. Can you answer your phone? And I'm like, he's trying to call me. And I messaged one of my friends. I'm like, oh my gosh, he's going to tell me he doesn't want it. Why would he do that to me? And she's like, they don't do that.
Right.
So I'm like, well, what if he does want it? So I had, like, paper and notes and everything. My hands were shaking so hard, I literally couldn't write.
Mm-hmm.
So
tell us about the series and what it's about.
Publishers Weekly said that it's hard sci-fi. I've never thought of it as hard sci-fi. So that was kind of like, my daughter's like, yeah, Mom, it's hard sci-fi. I'm like, no, it's not, because there's, like, people in it. basically, For nearly 500 years, the consortium has protected, did you hear the air quotes, protected, citizens' rights, and that recorders are raised to serve the public, and they are given neither names nor a lot of friends, because relationships create bias, and bias is punished. So when a secret research station goes silent, a recorder accompanies the recovery team, and her assignment is to document the team's actions and to recover a missing recorder. But there's an accident on the station that nearly kills her, and it upends everything that she believes. And she continues to try to fulfill her mission. But as she does, she uncovers a plot to develop a bioweapon capable of destroying the system, and also discovers the consortium is not what she's been taught. She embraces freedom over her training, and that choice reveals truths that are threatening her new friends and her own life. So the consortium is closing in. She has no name, no resources, and only an infinitesimal possibility of escape, and her time is running out.
But that sounds quite exciting. I can't wait to read it when it comes out in November. Can't wait to read it. So where did the idea come from?
Well, it's kind of complicated. There's a bunch of things that it came from. One of the characters, Kylie, her first lines of her chapter popped into my head on the drive home from work at about 11:30 p.m. 24 years ago. And I spent the rest of the drive reciting over and over again, Kylie hated those first moments when the ship left dock before artificial gravity kicked in. And I recited that thing over and over and over so I wouldn't forget it. But as for the story itself, I was working in a library, and one of my friends and I, we'd hang out in the parking lot after work, and we talked about all kinds of things. We talked about Down syndrome and autism and eliminating undesirables and abortion and Thomas the Tank Engine and his perpetual quest to be useful. And about the time I'd started writing again, I'd been neglecting it for about 20 years. I had a very strange dream, and I told my friend about it, and she told me to write it down. And that dream became the beginning of what is now chapter 2. And it merged with another dream, which was about tunnels and the value of a human soul. And I determined I was going to write a short story. I was going to write a 15,000-word short story. It was the longest thing I'd ever written. But as the characters started coming to life, total cancer here, and I realized by about what is now chapter 9 that Kylie was in the story. And then Max has passed, just like all of a sudden one day, I just like, boom, I knew it. It was there. I could see it. And I was like, oh my gosh, Max, I'm so sorry. And then the whole thing fell into place, and it is now much longer than 15,000 words.
Sure.
So random sentences and dreams and long rambles with friends after work, and the deep conviction that God works all things for good for his people and uses broken people to save others.
So how long did it take for you to write?
From the first time I started writing down that dream until the end of the first draft, 9 months to a year. To get that down. But this was my first novel ever. And while a lot of people will tell you, you never show anybody, don't show the light, doesn't see the light of day, what I did was I rewrote it, and I rewrote it, and I rewrote it probably for 4 years. As I learned, I kept on rewriting it. And I think the draft that I turned into Enclave was probably draft 20.
Kathy, we are at the end of our show today, and I really, really, really appreciate you coming on board and just, you know, representing some part of the introvert life and telling us your thoughts and ideas and perceptions and really educating us about what it is to be an introvert. But in the few moments we have left, what are some words of wisdom they can give to the introvert author?
Well, I'm going to give first words of wisdom to everybody, and that's write, and then read broadly, even outside your own genre. And then write some more, and then read books to study about crafting and face down your grammatical nightmares, whether they are participles or run-on sentences or there. And then write more. I would suggest writing short fiction for a lot of reasons. One is that it's easier to get the whole thing out. And two is you learn to control your words and precise precisely is done to make them do double duty. And three is it's a whole lot easier to get to say, hey, would you take 6 minutes and read this 1,000 word story than would you like to read my 1,500 bazillion word epic fantasy? Because people are going to say, no, I don't have 7 years to read your book, but I have 6 minutes to read your story. So you can get immediate feedback from that. For introverts specifically, it's really tempting to not want to share because it's yours. It's personal. It's part of your heart that you've like bled onto the page. But I would encourage you to find people who, even though you read outside your genre, to find people who love your genre and who know what it is, who can see your strengths and weaknesses within that genre. And I actually have, I was thinking about this, and there's a, I don't have the attribution for this quote, but it's about Tolkien. The Inklings encouraged Tolkien to persevere in his work, while also reminding him that even if his magnum opus was never completed, the simple act of being faithful to God's call to create had internal significance. As Tolkien paraphrased Gerard Hopkins, the only just literary critic is who admires more than does any man the gifts he himself has bestowed. If this story is in you and it's and you need to write it, then write it. But remember that the only just critic is Christ. Be open to learning and to sharing and to getting feedback because that's how we grow as writers. Criticism is not, I mean, some critics are personal, but in that case, the only true just critic is Christ. The words may have come from your heart, but that's not you. Keep writing, keep learning. Sometimes you have to open up and take chances, even if it's uncomfortable.
Kathy, thank you so much for being with me on the show today. Really enjoyed having you and looking forward to your success with your debut novel. And I cannot wait to have you back and have you back real soon.
Thank you. It's been a joy.
And we were talking today to Kathy McCrum. She is an introvert author as well as the author of Recorder, which is coming out in November of 2021. I'm so excited for this book and for this series. I'm so glad that Kathy and Alan took time out of their schedules to be with me yesterday and today to talk about being an extroverted writer and to talk about being an introverted writer. And I think we've all gained some better perceptions of both of these very interesting perspectives. So you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day, and God bless.